Check two, check three.
Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we attitude, we booty, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope and Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Monday night. I could actually do the pod tomorrow, but it is the NBA Finals Game 6. We just did a podcast two days ago. No, last night. What am I saying? Anyway, so I'm going to do it tonight. I think that I'll be getting back to more of my regular Tuesday show, Tuesday night, but we'll see. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about, folks. We're going to have round-by-round recap of this tremendous fight, excellent fight between Jermell Charlo and Brian Castaño. Very, very fun fight. Had a lot of fun watching it. Did score it. I thought it was a very competitive fight. You look on boxing Twitter, and it's a robbery. Right? It's a robbery. Charlo's the house fighter, even though many people thought he lost against Harrison, or that he, you know, that lost against Harrison was bullshit, but whatever. He's the house fighter. So we're going to talk all about this. You know, I had it a very competitive fight myself. I could see it for either guy. If I had to I was fine with a draw. You know, the one scorecard we just seemingly get all the time in boxing. It doesn't matter if it's a one-sided fight or not. It just seems like we just get this one scorecard every single solitary week, or pretty much. And it's just goofy. Like, and I got to say, much like 10-2, you know, for Canelo was bullshit, Golovkin 10-2 was bullshit too. Now, was it as bullshit? No, but bullshit's bullshit. You know what I mean? I did see some folks trying to go the other way. Well, it was 9-3. It was 9-3 for Castaño. Come on, dude, really? Like, I understand the fighters. Both fighters thought they won. I think Castaño called it a 9-3. So I get the fighters, dude. They're obviously about as biased as you can get. And I get some of the fans, right? Of course, they're biased, too. They got a rooting interest. Maybe they lost a bet, whatever. But some of these media members, Coppinger, who, you know, does break a lot of news. I would never say he doesn't. Part of the breaking news is, you know, is not getting it right. That comes with the territory. But he's talking about this was an easy fight to score. You know, it's like I just don't get it. It's just the word robbery. It's just thrown around so much. Meanwhile, we got a bad scorecard, so that makes it a robbery. You can call it a scorecard robbery if you want. I get some of that. But come on, guys. This wasn't some clear-cut, easy to score. There were some swing rounds. More than one, by the way. So we're going to go round by round. We're going to ask the question, was it the fight of the year? I mean, it's got to be up there. We know the level of importance was up there. We know both guys got hurt. Neither of them went to the ropes, but they didn't go to the ground. They go to the canvas, which was kind of surprising. It did kind of look like, you know, Charlo bounced off that rope a couple times. What was that, in the third? And then obviously later in the fight, 10th round, it looked like it was just a matter of time and Castaño was going to be on the mat. So we will be going over that. We'll talk a little bit about the undercard fights, too. The first fight was a very competitive fight. Really, really fun. I disagreed with the winner, but it was a really good fight. So overall, great, great Showtime triple header. Two of the three fights were phenomenal. Really fun. Really fun. And, you know, we'll preview the weekend. Obviously, this would normally be a big, big weekend coming up with Fury and Wilder trilogy, but that got delayed. There is some fights out that there were, you know, that we'll talk a little bit about. The Olympics are starting, what, Friday? Is Friday the opening ceremony? So boxing will be, I wouldn't say in the forefront, but it'll be on. It'll be on. Still kind of wondering how we get to see all of that. I just now saw the basketball schedule. Anyway, and then we'll talk a little bit, you know, a little bit more about, well, just there is some of that just people focusing on, people should be focusing on two things post this weekend as far as when it comes to this fight, Charlo and Castaño. Either how great of a fight it was, in the scorecard. Now, obviously, to an extent with the scorecard, because remember, we see this shit all the time, and I've signed petitions, I've called, I've emailed athletic commissions, I've voiced my opinion here on YouTube, on Twitter, so I've done my fair part when it comes to this stuff, but I'm not going to sit there and just pick and choose when and where, well, I don't know about where, but when I'm going to get pissed off, you know, and that's, it seems like, let's be honest, the Charlo twins, people love to hate them. It's either some of them, some people really love them, but a lot of people just hate on them. You know what I mean? And to sit there and focus on like hating the fighters and now discrediting Charlo, or even, you know, I saw someone calling Castaño just this one dimensional kind of slough type fighter. Like, swarmer. It's like, really? You saw a guy just swarming last night? That's all he did? Like, really? I thought he picked his shots compared to what he used to do or what he normally does. And I honestly think that if the rematch happens, both of them can improve upon their performance. I really do. I think that if you see Charlo with his jab to the stomach, chest, in the head, right, and just being a little bit more, just adding variety to his offense and just being a bit more active, because every time he jabbed him, consistently brought that right hand, he was able to keep the fight in the middle of the round or the ring, or he was able to push him back. And once he was pushing him back, then all of a sudden it's trouble there for Castaño, because he can't land that great left hook. He can't land that sneaky right hand. What's up with the Argentine fighters and these sneaky right hands, dude? I mean, man. I mean, Maidana may not look sneaky or whatever, but he'll land that thing, whether it's on your neck or on your head or whatever. You know, it was a good fight. It was a very good fight. So, and then as far as Castaño, just to finish my thought, he could be more active early in the rounds, you know? And that's something that you saw as the fight wore on, him doing more of. But he needs to be a little bit more active. That way, that'll control the round instead of always relying on trying to steal the round. And I think that will, you know, I think both these guys could have won the fight 8-4. Seriously, if that makes sense to you. But, yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about that, kind of go through the rounds. Of course, we're going to have some current fight news to discuss. We'll have our boxing Twitter segment, which was a doozy this week. That's for sure. Oh my goodness gracious. Just some great tweets. Don't get me wrong. Great tweets, but just some phenomenally tweets, right? And obviously the boxing Twitter segment, a lot of people think it's just, you know, hating on people and stuff like that. It's boxing Twitter. So there's great tweets, right? We read them, but we also expose some fanboys, but also media members acting and behaving as fanboys. There is a little bit of audio that we'll get to in a little bit about Terrence Crawford's team Well, we'll save it for the audio, but if you haven't heard, you know, you should definitely check this out because it's pretty interesting, you know, team member-wise, what they're talking about doing, which is what we all hope that actually happens and what probably should happen if it makes sense. So we got a little audio from Team Crawford that makes you feel a little bit better about that potential fight, but we'll see. We will see. If this is your first time listening to the Rope-A-Dope Radio podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Rope-A-Dope Radio. You know, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope-A-Dope, you know, to download the show directly there or, you know, listen to it on the browser if you don't want. You can find the platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, really across the board almost. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegrillingtruth.com. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69.99 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device. The cloud DVR is available. And if you sign up now for a choice package or above, it's a free year of HBO Max. That's AT&T TV. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and go through my scorecard, kind of go through the fight. And then I actually saw John just enter into the fold. We're going to get to him. And the number to dial is 646-381-4990. If some folks are on that aren't normally calling in, so I wouldn't know your area code, you can press 1 if you want to join in. If you're just chilling to listen, that's fine, too. You don't have to hang up. Sometimes when I start saying that I'm going to go to some callers, all of a sudden we see some hang-ups. And, you know, if you're just listening, you got stuff going on, you know, you're in traffic, you're whatever. It's all good. You know, you're doing errands. A lot of people go to the gym and listen to the show. Or I listen to podcasts when I go shopping, like grocery shopping. Straight up, I've listened to a podcast every time I do that. Anyway, enough about that. Like I said, I had this one close. First of all, the 24x24 Billy Joe Saunders ring, I hope we don't start. I know this is Texas, and I know that's where that fight was, Canelo and Saunders, right? I hope we don't get into this habit too much here. And I know it's Texas, dude, and you got shaky stuff. I don't think anyone was actually from Texas that did the judging, but and it's really just one judge that stands out, obviously. But let's not do the 24x24. Can we not do that? I mean, that, come on, 20x20, dude. Just do it. When it comes to big fights like this, I can see 18x18 as prospect and other fights and all that, but like, when you're on the high level like this, just 20x20, dude, and let's just try to keep to some sort of standard. But anyway, I had it 2-2 through four rounds. I gave Castano the first and the third, and I gave Charlo the second and the fourth. It just seemed like those lead right hands and a nice left hook a little later in the first round was enough for Castano, for me. Several right hands were landed really well, along with that left hook counter that landed really, really flush after Castano had done some good work with his left hook and a few right hands in the second round. But clearly that was a Charlo round because he hurt him. And he didn't – it's funny because, like, seconds after he hurt him, he did try to jump on him, but then he calmed down a little bit. And when you look back at that, you go, huh, the way Castano can recoup, you might as well have just tried to go for it. But I get it. I wasn't screaming at the TV saying, Charlo, now, you know, because you just thought, well, he's already won a round, this round. And even like in the third round, right, I actually had Charlo kind of leading that because he started to finally throw his right hand to the body a little bit behind the jab and everything like that. But to me, what stole the round is, Castano catching with that right hook and then two nasty left hooks. That's what took the round from him, in my opinion. And then the fourth round, Castagno was just missing too much with that sneaky right hand, whereas the jab right hand for me was landing better. I haven't watched it again, by the way, and when it comes to this type of fight, I generally like to let it linger for a second and go back to it and rescore it. The fifth round, this to me is one of those swing rounds. I could see for either guy. It did seem like, once again, Castagno landed harder and kind of stole the round off that. And then I gave Charlo the six. I thought his jab and right hand to the head and body, once again. He was just landing more clean in that round, but there was some really good give and take. And Castagno, once again, flirted, you know. So I think a lot more people are agreeable on how the last six rounds went than the first six. Some people had Castagno up 4-2. Some people had Charlo up 4-2. Some people, of course, had it 3-3. So I was right there in the 3-2 range. Like I said, I could see it for Castagno, but, you know, maybe Charlo did win the fourth round. You know, I don't know. You know what I mean? Or I'm sorry, the fifth round. I don't know. It seemed like he didn't close strong enough. And that's what the judges can remember off of a competitive round. So then we're going to go to the sixth round. Then, look, this is where Castagno started really controlling the fight. And he started finally working earlier in the more of the beginning and middle round rather than that last 90 seconds and especially the last minute. So I gave him the seventh, eighth, and ninth. Just pressure, thudding right hands, flurries. He had him on the rope way too many times. And that was another thing. When you look at Charlo, there's times where Castagno put him on the rope, right? And remember, this is 24 by 24. So there is some more room there. And I thought Charlo got into the earmuff mode, the high guard earmuff mode, too many times. And it's as if he almost, and I'm not saying he completely walked himself to the ropes, but when you look at it, and I even rewound a couple different times during the fight, because it was like, dude, you had an exit strategy where you could have maybe just dipped or maybe landed one of those left hooks and then get out. But once you're all the way on the ropes, then Castagno has the advantage, obviously. So I gave him those three rounds in a row, six or seven, eight, and nine. But, and then you look at, obviously, the 10th. And, you know, I can understand to an extent anyway, some people thinking it was a 10-8. I think it's a tad bit knee-jerky, only because Castagno did land some decent shots before he got hurt and a little late, too. No surprise there, right? Castagno was landing late the whole time in rounds. But I didn't score a 10-8 round. You know, I don't need a knockdown to score a 10-8 round. And it was a dominant round. It was the most dominant round either guy had in the fight. But, of course, we score this thing round by round. And that's kind of a bigger picture thing. Do think that the more thudding shots throughout the fight was clearly Castagno, right? But when you look at who was more hurt in the fight, now the third round, you had Charlo bouncing off that rope a couple times, especially that one time where he almost dipped, right? But other than that, I didn't really see him hurt. Now, I think both guys got buzzed plenty because they both got landed, you know, had huge shots on them. But obviously the 10th round, and I guess the second round too, but especially the 10th round, so he was more hurt, but that's not how, like, you could say, well, in a 6-6 draw, if you put a gun to my head, I'm going to go with Charlo because I thought he hurt the guy more. And some people just like people finishing the fight stronger, which I did give the 10th, 11th, and the 12th to Charlo. The 11th was a lot of back and forth, but Charlo finished stronger. And he was kind of early and late, you know what I mean? And same with the 12th round. I felt like Charlo did some good work early and then late, and he had plenty of moments. But, you know, Castagno had plenty of moments in there too, I should say. but it's one of the fights of the year, if not the fights of the year. I had it 6-6. I could see 7-5 for Castaño, 6-5-1 for Castaño. Like I said, I really kind of feel like those first six rounds were the key. But because I feel like there's not a ton of debate, as much anyway, that's for sure, from the last six rounds. So this kind of is like how you felt the first six rounds are going is probably how you're going to end up with your scorecard, in my opinion. The 117-111 is obviously ridiculous. 114-114, don't have a problem with that. 114-113, don't have a problem with that one. Or was it 115-113? I can't remember. But, you know, the one thing I won't do is let one scorecard lead me to say that this is a major robbery or a huge robbery, or forget how good of a fight it was and how much anticipation there is for a rematch. You know, and the Charlos in general have been on this summer, June or July fight, and then December. And that's another, like, argument about can we just get one more fight so it's three fights in a calendar year and how much I think that would help. Now, obviously, people have guarantees, so the budgets aren't set up for that. You know, that's part of it, too. People don't want to talk about that, but that is part of it. And, you know, since DAZN went on their spending spree a couple of years back, you know, people's guarantees slowly went up, too, right? Or not slowly. Look at Crawford's guarantee, perfect example. But I won't let it ruin how good of a fight is. The only reason why I say it is because, like I said before, we see this so often where there's one scorecard where we're like, what the fuck are you watching? But I surely didn't see any kind of 9-3 or 10-2 for Castaño either. But like I said, I do think they can both improve on their performance. I don't think it was the best. I think Charlo didn't fight up to his level. I don't think that's the best I've seen Castaño look in the first, say, 3-4 rounds. But once he figured it out late third, sometime in the fourth, then it was like, okay, yep, this is the Castaño I know. So it was a great fight. Does suck that there's one bad scorecard. But like I said, this shit happens pretty much every week. So I'm not going to sit there and put all this emphasis, just like we talked about the belts and the undisputed stuff. Notice, you know, I made the point. I got some bad messages over it, but was I lying? I mean, they have three belts in the WBC. This was an interim belt. What the – Haney isn't hurt. Why do they need an interim belt? There's three different belts. You got an undisputed. So why weren't people freaking out? The way I looked at it, it was just a good win for JoJo Diaz, and it set him up for good fights, Haney or whoever. But it's just funny – when people pick and choose, and obviously I get when it's at the highest level how different that is, and obviously this important fight. So I do get that you're going to talk about it more, but to focus solely on that or just dissing both these fighters, it's just like, wow, really? So you want the best to fight the best, but some people are like, why would you even have a rematch? It's like, and I'm talking about some media members and part-time media members, like, that have a fairly heavy presence in boxing. It's just funny to me. It's like, which one do you guys want? It's just funny how, I don't know, it's just funny to me. Anyway, so yeah, I had it a draw, but if you ask me who would I probably favor, I would favor 6-5-1 Castaño, but just, I don't know. I thought it was a tight fight. I had it 3-3, both, you know, both frames, I guess you could say, six-round frames. All right, we're going to bring in great boxing mind John to see how he scored it and, you know, to see how we could do this. Did I not finish my thought? I don't think I finished my thought. Hold on. That three fight, we could just get an extra fight a year. That would make a difference, I think. In building a fan base and whatnot, not to every fighter, but the reason why I said that is because they're on that summer, June, July, and December. They've been on that for a little bit now. So really that is three fights in a year. It's just not a calendar year. Over 12 months, the Charlos have been fighting three times over 12 months. But imagine that four fights over, you know, let's say 14 months, 15 months, 16 months. Then all of a sudden you're like, wow, okay, that does add something to it. Anyway, I just realized I didn't finish my thought. I think I have too much caffeine in me. I think that's what it is. I'm all over the place. I'm still excited about this fight, actually, too. All right, how about I shut up and let's hear John, like I said, the great boxing man, John, to talk about this fight. How you doing, John? How you doing tonight, man?
Hey, thanks for the kind words, Chris. Great to be here, as always, and ready to talk about some Charlo Castaño and, of course, some other great fights we had over the weekend.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get to those undercard fights too, especially the opener. That was like I said before, if this is if Showtime's going out of business, this has got to be the best clearance sale in the history of industrialized revolution. Because I mean, this is like, wow, like this is how you go out with a bang if you're going to leave the business. Which obviously they're not. But, all right, let's talk about this fight. First of all, how'd you score it? What'd you see, you know, positive, negatives for both guys? And then rematch-wise, you know, I'm really intrigued because, like I said, I really feel like could just notch up a little bit of game plan and they could come out a clearer winner, in my opinion.
Yeah, this one, I thought Castaño definitely won this fight, Chris. And you know, just for background, because some people, you know, we have, like you've pointed out correctly, even more so than you had in the past, you've got full-time boxing media or part-time boxing media that have biases and connections and things like that. Why I just say that is, I mean, look, I certainly have been complimentary of Jermell Charlo, no bias against him. I've been one of the people over the last couple of years that has consistently said that I actually, and I don't use the term robbery loosely, I thought he got robbed in the first Harrison fight. So no bias from me against Jermell Charlo, and I thought a lot of Castaño, but I actually thought about this one for a while, but I thought in this fight, it actually played out exactly the way I thought it would, except that I thought Charlo would get him before the end. And he didn't. And, you know, I've said when we talked about it last week, I didn't feel like Charlo could win a decision because of Castaño's volume and talent if he didn't get him out of there. And to me, that's what happened. I mean, he definitely hurt him in the second round and, you know, stung him later on. But Castaño wasn't he was in trouble, but, you know, he wasn't in that horrible trouble where he was really, you know, losing his senses or anything like that. And he was able to hang on, and I thought he definitely hurt Charlo in that second round. More trouble than he had him in, I think, more trouble than he's getting credit for. It just was at the end of the round. So, you know, he hurt Charlo as well. Now, Charlo hurt him more over
That's
the course
a good
of the
point.
Fight. But
that's a really good point that you just made.
Yeah, but I thought over the whole course of the fight, I thought Castaño was the sharper puncher. You know, he was really the guy showing the quicker hands and the sharper punching. I think Charlo, over the course of the fight, still was the overall harder puncher. But, you know, it's more where he's kind of got to wind up on it. And I thought, you know, you mentioned about the first half of the fight, which is a good point, Chris. Now, to me, I did think Castaño had built a pretty big lead over the first half of the fight. And, you know, again, Charlo was still able to hurt him later on, but I also don't feel Charlo finished quite as strong as people are making out. I thought Castaño was really, even though Charlo hurt him late again, I thought Castaño was the guy with a bit of the better stamina too. You know, he does have a higher volume. That's where you can look at those punch stat numbers, you know, even before this fight. So it's not something that just, you know, happened in this fight. Charlo, because of his talent, was able to, and power, was able to get Castaño to, you know, cut down his volume a little bit, but, you know, Castaño was still the busier guy and landing the sharper punches. You know, it wasn't that it was all pity pat. I don't, if a guy's just pity patting, I don't take that into as much consideration, but I don't think he was pity-patted. They were sharp shots. And, you know, Castaño's a talented guy. Both guys had talent. I didn't think Charlo fought bad. I mean, I'm in that camp. I didn't think Charlo fought bad, but I just think with what his volume is, this was a tough matchup for him going in that I thought he could win, because I thought with the size differential in terms of the height, the reach, that Charlo and the power punching he's been doing in his last nine fights or so, I thought he'd eventually get to him. Came very close, but didn't pull it off. And I thought Castaño won this. You know, I think you make an excellent point about the one scorecard thing. I think people get way too worked up about that. And I don't think there's any conspiracy theory or anything like that. I mean, what would be the sense of a conspiracy on one scorecard? I mean, what these people argue doesn't
right.
even make any sense. Well, it's in Texas, so you're going to have one judge as part of a conspiracy theory? I mean, what that?
Yeah,
means,
if you're going to go through all the trouble. If you're going to go through all the trouble and risk, like, why not just, you know?
Right. You're going to go through all the trouble and risk.
It's like fixing
elections, but
giving up house seats. Yeah, that's what you'd do.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd fix an election, but give up house seats.
Or it's like fixing an election in two states out of 50 or something like that. You know, it just
right.
it doesn't. These things aren't even logical that people argue. They don't make any sense. I don't want to get too deep into it, but there are psychologists that talk about it. It's when there's humans that they can't make sense of random events that they try to come up with these conspiracy theories because they can't make sense of random events, so they want to have a causation. They can't rest unless they have a causation. So the one judge has to be paid off, you know,
especially
or completely
Spence
incompetent.
Coming up to the division, John. I mean, if we want to go long term,
yeah.
Spence isn't going to fight Charlo. They're in the same camp. So the PB Castaño as the undisputed only helped Spence move up to 54.
Yeah. Right. That doesn't make any sense. But one thing I do want to say, why I was saying that before I qualified, is I do want to say in this one, though, I think that's where people don't use logic that, you know, I've said this before on the show, Chris. I think that if you have a lot of really tight rounds and a judge is actually doing his or her job and just says, look, I'm not going to alternate rounds because the fight's competitive. You know, if I think fighter A really won all
sure.
the close rounds, I'm just going to get them to fighter A. That's what people, I think,
right.
don't get. Then you can have these kind of scorecards or once in a very competitive fight. Now, with that said, just in my own view in this one, and I don't think conspiracy theory, but I just think with just judging Vasquez in this one, most of the time, almost all the time, I think there are enough close competitive rounds where if one judge has them all go to one fighter, say fighter A, you could have one of those scorecards in a very close competitive fight. This was a close competitive fight, don't get me wrong, but in this one, I didn't really see where, you know, I didn't see where there was nine rounds available for Charlo. See, you know, you may be listening,
yeah,
some other people may, but what I thought with this one, and it's no bias against Charlo, I picked him. I thought he got robbed in the first Harrison fight, and I don't use the term robbery easily, but this is just my view of this fight. I thought you had to reach to give Charlo six rounds in this fight. And, you know, was it Weisfeld, who usually is one of the best judges? He's a New Jersey lawyer, by the way. I've actually talked a little bit of boxing with him decades back at CLEs in New Jersey. I agree, he usually is one of the best judges. But, you know, this is not in the rule book. But let's face it, Chris, and you were kind of getting to this, and you're right. Like, I think we got to point this out, too. And these are not conspiracy theory things, but, like, you know, we've gotten in the U.S. over recent, really, you got to say decades, really, at this point, probably last, let's say, 20 years. You know, in the U.S., nobody's scoring even rounds, and they're not. And, again, even though the rule book permits this stuff, they're not scoring 10-8 rounds when there's not a knockdown. You know, let's face it, in the last, let's say, 20 years or so in the U.S., I'd have to go look back and see exactly when you kind of got these unwritten rules. But they're definitely there. We all know it. You know,
yeah,
two knockdown rounds of 10-7, right, a one knockdown rounds of 10-8. And even if one guy dominates a round but there's not a knockdown, nobody's given 10-8s. So, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, you can do it. I'm not saying it shouldn't be the way it's done. But let's face it, this came out of nowhere in this fight. And I'm not saying conspiracy theory. I'm just saying it came out of nowhere in this fight. So I think it's nowhere near, it's just not there. I'm just saying in this one, and I know people say review the judges, but look, let's face it. It's still a subjective thing, even though you have criteria and everything. I'm just saying in this one, I'm not going with the conspiracy theories or any of that or the Texas, because like you said, the people aren't from Texas. So what's it again? You've got to show me what it has to do with Texas. They say, well, you know, that Texas judging, but we got Steve Weisfeld from Jersey is one of the judges in the fight. I mean, it's not what, tell me, what is it about? You got to tell me what's the conspiracy. What's the conspiracy theory of Texas bringing it out? And they say Vegas judging people. I don't want to go on a get into psychological texts, but they are out there. I mean, people are they causal things to when they're not there, because remember it was always one of those judges in Vegas. And then, you know, when there was a lot of fights in Atlantic City, it was, you know, those judges in Atlantic City and, you know, those judges in the UK and you know, you do get some scorecards. You're like, what the heck? But people have biases and, you know, maybe sometimes they are influenced by the crowd. People have subconscious biases. I mean, that's big. Let's face it. I mean, it's human beings we're talking about here that exists. So without getting too far in all that, but I just thought this was one. I'm not going to tell you I have a theory exactly why, but I just do think this was one that Castaño deserved better. And he really, I think on this one, he should have gotten the win. You know, and why I said, I'm not going to go robbery, but the problem I had with this one more than most, and as you can tell, I had a bit of a problem with this one more than most, is that I just thought you had to reach. I thought on this one, you had to reach to get six rounds for Charlo. And that's why I don't like when people normally, I don't like when they say, oh, well, that, you know, draw as a robbery. In other words, because, you know, if it could have been 7-5 either way, I didn't see that on this one. In other words, I thought that.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't even see 7-5 for Charlo. I say 6-6, but I didn't see 7 rounds either for him. Or 6-5-1 or whatever. I would have to favor Castaño, you know, by.
So if I'm a Charlo backer on the scoring in this fight. And I don't really buy this argument on this one, but I think this is the best argument you could make for Charlo, is because I do always agree that this is logical. You know, if you had it 7-5 Castaño in rounds, and you know you didn't do the 10-8 thing like Weisfeld anywhere, you know, then can you really say a draw is a robbery? In other words, if you shift one round to Charlo and that's a draw. And I always do agree with that logic. It's kind of hard to say, oh, a draw was outrageous, but you know, I mean, this one, you know, it seemed like, I mean, this was probably, to me, was probably more of like an eight rounder for Castaño. I mean, I guess that's really the way I'm looking at it. No 10-8. No doubt Castaño was hurt on a couple occasions. He was, but you know, Charlo was hurt once at the end of the second round, too, pretty badly, sagging into the ropes. You know, was there a 10-8?
Yeah,
there was no 10-8
there.
Went
on the ropes, clearly.
Yeah, he was on the ropes. I mean, looked like the ropes saved him from going down.
The middle one, yeah.
Ref
didn't
call it, but still, you know, nobody scored that a 10-8 round. So, you know, I think – so let's get to now, since I've given my take on that. You know, I don't care about all the alphabet stuff. We know that. I think it's, you know, one of the things that hurts boxing, can lead to the ruin of boxing, has diminished boxing. I just don't get why people continue to insist on paying attention to it. I do get why some, I should say. I mean, because it's these biases we're talking about where they're connected to promoters or networks who want to promote these alphabets. But any independent person, I don't see why you're paying attention to the alphabet. So I'm saying that because – when I started hearing this stuff that night and then the next morning that, oh, well, you know, Castaño's got his WBO mandatory and Charlo's got his – who the hell cares? I mean, who the hell cares? These guys need to get it on again. I don't care about IBF mandatories. I don't care about WBO
mandatories. I don't care if they drop the damn belt or whatever, yeah.
Exactly. Who the hell cares? I mean, who in their freaking right mind would think if these guys had an immediate rematch in the fall and the WBO says it's not for the belt and the IBF says it's not for their belt, that the winner of this fight's not a 154-pound champion? I mean, that's insane. That's just insanity. So let me say that. And then one thing.
I really highly doubt they block it. If they found out within 2 months or something that, hey, we're going to do the rematch in December, I doubt they'd even come out and block it. But you never know. What else are you going to say?
Yeah, and there are patterns here. I don't care about the alphabet bit. It would be for the ring title. It would be for the transnational title. You want to look at a lineal 154. But one thing for the alphabet people, that if they need to be soothed or be keep from clutching their pearls, which they shouldn't, I mean, this part you can say just looking. I mean, I you don't know exactly how it works behind the scenes, but you know, with PBC's relationship with the WBC, you know their belts, you know their belts going to be on the line. I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's for alphabet people. So then these people say undisputed, but
in the WBA,
you know, I think when you're talking about, but when you're talking about, I think the WBA would stay on there too, but I don't care about those. Just saying for those people that do care. But I think the more important thing is, look, be for the title, the ring, transnational. I mean, you know, you're basically your lineal for this weight class. So who cares about the alphabet belts? But let me say for the people, you know, they're not getting – I don't think they're quite figuring it why. But I am going to say this. I mean, I think Jermell Charlo is real good, and I think Brian Castaño is real good. And, you know, if there were only 8 weight classes, these guys – would still be contenders, you know what I mean? They'd be top 10 middleweights. But I think people are a little bit on the right track when they talk about, like, well, even though 154, there's a lot of competitive matchups, you know, maybe how good are some of these guys? Finger on why, but I think that sense is actually somewhat correct, that not being critical of these two guys, but just that there's too many weight classes. And, you know, if there was 8, you know, if there was the original 8 plus, say, a cruiserweight, you know, Castaño, Charlo, they'd all be at 160 in with Golovkin and, you know, Jermall Charlo, you know, Derry Vianchenko. And I mean, I'm just saying it's less watered down. Both of them less watered down. These guys like Jason Rosario are not, you know, who was just near the top, you know, he's not cracking the top. And why that matters is because then.
And we could do that with
Jermall,
a lot of
Charlo,
weight classes too. Look at the guys at 140
right.
Come up to 47. That's not going to be a walk in the park for them either, but you're making a good point. I think it's just a fun-ass division in modern-day boxing to watch because of the what-ifs and we don't know. And I kind of think this is like a perfect nutshell draw the way the last 5 years of this division is worked out. Great fights, freaking upsets and all that. But I know what you're saying. Yeah. You cannot completely diss Castaño and Charlo. You're not doing that. I'm not trying to do that, though.
But I think you're right. And what I was going to get to was that was going to be exactly my next point, which I've been making in recent podcasts. And a lot of people are going to think I'm moving the bar. I'm not. I've always felt this way. And I agree with you. 154 has had a lot of fights that have entertained me. I've really enjoyed it. That's not my point either. But it does go back to, like, think, frankly, it's only because he's from the UK that, you know, Josh Taylor, you know, he's, you know, transnational champ at 140, the ring, you know, undisputed if you care about the alphabets. But let's face it, and I'm not knocking him either, but it is that was what I was getting to. It's the same point. Nobody's really, like, you know, here in 2021 looking at Josh Taylor like he's Marvin Hagler or something like that, okay? And they should, and their instinct to me is correct. It's just what you said. If we're talking about 8 to 9 weight classes that people cared about or in the traditional where that's all you had, I mean, Josh Taylor's, in other words, that's what I'm kind of getting, that is exactly what I'm getting at. It's kind of like, you know, Castaño and Jermell Charlo are like kind of like halfway there. Josh Taylor's kind of like halfway there, but they're really not all the way there. You know, if Josh Taylor got, and then people say, oh, that's too tough of a stand. Not really, it's not. Like, if Josh Taylor then got to the top of welterweight, 147, then we could say all hail Josh Taylor and historical and start talking about this guy's all-time greatness. And the same with Jermell Charlo, you know, if he did it then at middleweight, 160 pounds, you know, or Castaño did. But without that, people still want to talk about it. But I noticed that it doesn't have the same impact, and I think that's why. And that's why I'd argue, even if maybe it's not the same amount of – well, really, although he has had a lot of lineal, let's be fair, that's, to me, part of why a guy like Canelo Alvarez does carry more weight, no pun intended, does – get people more going. Yeah, he's always been popular, but it's also then what he's done since Floyd Mayweather. You know, some people love him, some people love to hate him, but look, he still moved through, you know, weight classes. Manny Pacquiao, you know, picking up, you know, lineal belts or moving through weight classes, getting to the top. Now, a guy like Hagler, I agree, he didn't have to do it, but that's when people were only caring about eight weight classes, and he was the middleweight champion. It's okay under those circumstances, right, to just stay at one weight, but when you've got all these other weight classes and guys floating around and all these belts and stuff like that, sometimes, you know, that's not enough. So I think that I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing the entertainment that Josh Taylor has provided by taking some big fights, same with Jermell Charlo and these 154 fights. I like it,
sure,
but to me it's almost like we're halfway there.
Yeah, that's fair. And like I said, I think that, you know, really the other 16 or 17 or 18 or whatever it is now, you know, like you said, even if we could go to 10 or whatever, that'd be great. And that's just,
yep,
an ongoing thing that I don't see changing anytime soon. Maybe, you know, when we're gone and, you know, dead and gone, maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't think that's going to change. But you make a good point. And I like the way you explained it, instead of just being like, oh, this weight, there's no elite top 5 pound for pound guy in this weight. Well, sure, but we can go to a lot of weight classes, and that's the case. So
right.
I do like how
I don't mean that, like,
I broke that down.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I think these guys would be threats if there were 8 or 9 weight classes, but it just wouldn't be clear that they're the guys. That's all.
Right. Now, real quick, we're going to get to the undercard in just a second. Do you see just more of the same happening in a rematch? Or do you think, judging by you know, saying Castaño wins 8 rounds, do you think, like, this is just the styles not going to match up for Charlo? Or do you think he could actually use the jab more, one, and then, like he did at times, throw the right hand to the body and just mix up a little bit of his variety and try to push him back? Because when – push him back, just to clear that sentence, because when he was in the middle of the ring and pushing him back, he could have won the rounds a lot more cleaner. Or do you think it's just a bad style matchup and Castaño's just got his number due to style and whatnot?
I think if it happens again this year, and I say that because Castaño – he's got that small height and reach for when we're getting into 154 pounds or middleweight. It might be hard for him to have an extended career. With that said, if it happens this year, I just think he's got Charlo's number. I think you did make a point last week, Chris, and you made it again, that I did see at moments Charlo tried to do. He tried at some moments to kind of go back to his old, where he was almost like the boring boxer. With the jab, his jab was by far his best punch when he fought that way, and it was somewhat effective. And you know, I saw him doing this better than he used to, but this is why I think that Castaño might have his number, one of the reasons. But see, when he was doing that, even though I did see, like, this is since he's been with Derek James, like, I saw him when he was doing his old jabbing self a few times, trying to do what you said, and then throwing his right hand. You know, remember, I did say it last week, too, when he used to fight in those more boring fights, he wasn't the puncher, he was mostly jab. He used to throw the right hand kind of awkwardly. I saw him throw it better than he used to, but he doesn't, when he fights in that old style he had, he doesn't have the, you know, throwing that right hand in a 1-2, he just doesn't get the pop. I mean, and like I saw him throw that a little better than he used to, but I just still think, like, when he goes in back to his classic style, that he doesn't get the pop on when he tries to throw that straight right hand or that right cross that he does.
Yeah, maybe it's kind of a blend too, because because some of it's pushing him back. Because when he was able to push him back, then all of a sudden you could see when Castaño tried to throw that right hand, he could get out of range easy. So maybe it's a mixture of his style, because I know what you're saying about his old style.
Yeah, I think what he would have to do to me is, even though Castaño is shorter, I don't think, just the way he fights, I don't think he can get the, he can hurt you. He's got a great jab, but Castaño is skilled enough that I don't think he can just go back to his old style, land the jab enough and outpoint him, because I think Castaño's got that volume and he's skilled enough. You know, Castaño's got a real good amateur pedigree and he fought in the WBS and he knows how to fight. You could see that Saturday night. I don't think he can go back to the old style and do enough to get him out of there or have enough volume to win a decision. To me, what he would have to try to do, and I thought he would do it more here, like, you know, you pointed out, you know, when he wasn't doing the jab and he was getting pushed back on the ropes and things, I think what he'd have to do would be to kind of push back Castaño with the physicality even more than the jab and just be throwing, like, all power shots. And then, you know, get him out of there with a tough, close in-fight before the end. But what I saw, even though he came close, I don't think he's going to be able to do that if they have a rematch in the fall, because I think Castaño punches too sharply for him. He's got a lot of volume, and I think he's got the hand speed edge on him too. And I just think that those kind of scenarios, he's not going to be able to get Castaño out of there, and Castaño is going to out-hustle him. So I think if it happens this year, I just think it's a style matchup where Castaño's got his number.
Yeah, that sneaky right hand, dude. It's just a lot of people were talking about the left hook coming in, and I get why. He landed plenty of them, but, man, it's just there. It's like, oh, there I am. It's short. It's not an overhand all the way, but it's not necessarily the straightest. It's just a sneaky right hand. And he lands it. He lands it really well. And the only time he wouldn't or wasn't able to do it was, like I said, in the middle of the round or in the middle of the ring or when he got pushed back a little bit. Then it was like, oh, wow, dude, now you could see the reach advantage. But if you're not using the reach advantage, it's not going to be there. I think we've covered the main event enough. Let's kind of combo this talk, Aleem and Vidal Jr. I actually had Aleem winning this 6-4. Or a 5-5 draw. I didn't see six rounds for Vidal Jr., but it was a good back-and-forth fight. The body work was pretty key for Vidal Jr. He had a 73-42, looking at it right now, advantage there. He definitely was the more accurate puncher. But to me, this was just a good-ass fight, John. This is a really fun fight. It just kept heating up and heating up and heating up. And then Rolly kind of just slowly but surely beat down Anthony Yigit. And, I mean, talk about loading up with the right hand. I mean, you can see from the start that's what was on his mind, talking about Rolly Romero. Let's talk about those two fights.
Yeah, I thought the Aleem Vidal fight was one of the best fights of the year. I thought that was a tremendous fight. I mean, Aleem just amazes me with the heart and the fighting spirit he has. I mean, he's a real throwback. I mean, he's just a real throwback. He looks like, you know, I tweeted it out to, I think yesterday. I mean, the utmost compliment to him, he looks like some guy fighting on NBC Sports World in 1982 or something like that. One of those middleweight fights, you know. I mean, the guy just comes to fight. You know, he was boxing some, but then he just decided to go to war with Vidal, who was much bigger and a bigger puncher. And he was able to do it, though. I mean, just he took some vicious shots to the body, toughed it through, was coming back. You know, Aleem's not a great puncher, but he's not feather-fisted either. And you could see how Vidal's face was busted up afterward, even though he couldn't drop him because, you know, he was hitting Vidal with some clean shots. I thought it was a great fight, one of the best fights of the year. I thought it was good enough to even be a fight of the year contender. I don't think anything's going to end up beating out that Apoche-Glent and cruiserweight war. But this was up there. I think this should be mentioned at year's end as one of the contenders. Great fight. I definitely thought Aleem won it. I'm with you all the way. I didn't even see six rounds for Vidal on this thing. Certainly couldn't see him winning it. So I'm not saying conspiracy. I think the judges had a bad night, though. I don't say it as often as most people, but I do think Saturday night was a bad night for the judging. I thought Aleem definitely deserved better, and I thought Aleem definitely won this fight, you know, resurrected his career. Although, you know, really, except for when he got caught by that one bomb by Santana, which he just happened to walk into one. It was one of those things. He's been in every fight he's ever been in. You know, even if he hasn't gotten the nod or it's been a draw or he hasn't gotten a decision, including this one, which I thought he won. So, I mean, you know, he's fought a lot of tough guys at this point. Middleweight, you know, the bottom part of the division is pretty weak. I think he's right there, even though he didn't get the decision here. And Vidal, you know, when I thought about Vidal's performance, even more the next day, he's only 25 years old. He's only had like 13 fights. You know, hadn't been in with that type of opposition. I think we should stay pretty high on this guy. I kind of, you know, some people were down on him. I thought about this harder. I mean, you know, a lot of prospects coming up, and Aleem's only 27. He's not over the hill. He proved he's not over the hill or anything. I mean, that's a vicious test for a 25-year-old guy to have a guy like Aleem with his heart, you know, coming at you in like your, what, 14th fight. And the guy's from Uruguay, not a boxing hotbed. You know, he didn't quit. You know, a guy who didn't have heart or wasn't committed to this thing would have folded, you know, with what Aleem was coming at him with. Even though Aleem's not a huge puncher, he's a good enough puncher. He was able to stop Petrov, who, you know, was a great Ukrainian amateur and was undefeated at the time in a big upset, you know, a few years back in another great fight. So, you know, I don't think he deserved the win, but I think in hindsight, looking back at it a little more, I think we should stay high on Vidal. I think not too many prospects are faced with that kind of a test or a guy coming at them that hard at that stage of their career from a non-boxing hotbed. He's fighting in the U.S. So, you know, you could see he had some vicious power to the body. He was hurting Aleem there, and he looks like he's got a good right hand too. So, I think he's going to be a factor after this. I think there's a lot of middleweights he can still take. So this was kind of a win for both guys, and a great fight, one of the best fights I saw all year. And then Romero, I'm not sure why there's all the hate for Romero. I like him winding up throwing bombs. You know, I think he could tighten it up a little if there's somebody that worries him enough that he thinks he needs to do that. I mean, I don't even think this guy's on Romero's level, but, you know, it's a little bit too where Alan Babic, you know, the Croatian fighting in the UK, when he loads up with bombs. I mean, he knows who he's in with. I'm not saying he's going to just change style, but these guys want to be entertaining. I mean, they know who they're in with and they want to be entertaining. You know, what the heck's wrong with that? I don't get it. I mean, I saw Romero say, I'm getting Yidget out of there. And he did it. And we talked about the too many weight classes. I found some people just can't deal with this argument because it doesn't fit their worldview of that. I mean, Romero, 5 pounds less than Yidget, who's at junior welterweight, 140, and we're supposedly need all these weight classes, these 17 weight classes, according to some people. And Romero's a lightweight, the class below, and he blows this guy away. And then they say, oh, well, that's Yidget. Yeah, but it's supposed to be that we need all these weight classes, that Yidget's supposed to have all this big size advantage because he's been a junior welterweight, and he's literally coming into the ring in this one 5 pounds heavier, and the alphabets are telling us we really need this weight class for a competitive, fairness. So you're telling me that Romero's so superior to – he obviously is superior to Yidget, but he's such a talent and he's so superior to Yidget that he just, you know, makes weight classes irrelevant. I mean, it's kind of laughable. The point is you don't need the weight class. And then Romero is better than Yidget, so he blew him away. That's all. But I want to kind of frame this one in everybody's mind that, you know, you don't need a 140 in between 135 and 147. You don't. 135 and 147, yeah, that's a difference. That's why you need a weight class. Yeah, at that point, because you're getting into that there's a difference, but you don't need a 140.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, sometimes if someone's moved up, you know, a couple of weight classes already, then you go up 5 pounds, you know, it's different. Or like, right. You know, it's totally different sports. But like I wrestled in high school and, you know, it was 103, 112, 119, and then it started to tighten up, 125, 130, 135, 140, 140, 152. And I got to say, from 30 to 35 to 40, you can clearly see the difference in everybody's body. But then again, it has a lot more to do with leverage and body weight, and you're constantly in contact with each other. Whereas it's not, I mean, yeah, you're constantly in contact with in boxing, but it's punching. It's not grappling. It's not wrestling. So there is, you know, it's not as much weight going around like that. But you can clearly see every weight class a little different on your own team, on the other team. Like, you could totally see it. But like I said, using that argument for boxing doesn't really hold up all the way because, like I said, you're punching. You're not using leverage and weight as much, nowhere near as much, obviously. You know, this was supposed to be a big week coming up on Saturday. There still is some fights going on this Saturday. There's one in the UK, you know, that's out there. Obviously, you know, the whole Wilder, well, I should say Fury Wilder 3 was supposed to happen. We know what happened to that, or at least we assume we know what happened to that. A variety of fights, like just randomly, oh, there's one in Philly. Oh, there's one in that country. There's one in Japan. There's one in Argentina. Right now, Joe Joyce and Carlos Takam doesn't have a home. For here in the States, which is kind of ridiculous. I know ESPN Plus just did the Sky Sports stuff or ESPN and Top Rank stuff. You know, I know that's part of that thing. And now we know why some of the BT stuff and other stuff wasn't making it on ESPN Plus anymore because of that output deal. But it's that kind of sucks for us with the UK because how many fights is Sky Sports really going to put on that we just need on ESPN Plus compared to a BT or Matchroom on Sky? You know, that'll be, you know, something that we'll have to see, you know, just how good that is. Of course, Matchroom, at least you get it on DAZN, though. Do you see Joe Joyce having some issues at all, or you think he'll just be his normal self and kind of slowly but surely knock out Carlos Takam? Because, like I said, it was one of those weekends where everyone kind of, you know, the reason why the schedule isn't heavy here as far as the big fight is because obviously there was a big fight.
Yeah, I don't see Joyce having any problem at all here. I think, to me, you know, Takam kind of goes back to that bad Klitschko era. I mean, you really look closely at it, at his record and his career. I mean, I'm not just trying to knock the guy. I mean, he tries his best, but I've frankly never thought he was particularly talented. His wins in his career, it was faded names. Never could beat anybody else or get by anybody else. For goodness sakes, even though it was a very entertaining fight, you know, he's basically the only guy Chisora was able to knock out worthy of note, unless you want to count Scott for that. So, you know, and he was battering Chisora in that fight before Chisora caught him with a couple of bombs. But, I mean, I don't think people should forget that, though. I mean, this is a guy that just got knocked out by Derek Chisora, you know, a couple of years back. And they say, oh, well, he beat Jerry Forrest. But, you know, people are looking at that Forrest coming back against Zhang. But, I mean, Zhang was battering Forrest all over the place before he ran out of gas. And, you know, Zhang is extremely limited and is in his later 30s. I mean, I just don't see what people think. Like, what's Takam supposed to be bringing here? He's 40 years old. He's not a puncher. He doesn't have great size for the weight. Joyce does have great size. He's kind of one of those punchers in almost like the old, he does look like an old George Foreman at times. I mean, you know, kind of like thudding. He's not sharp, but there's something there just with his size And, you know, he proved against Dubois, again, like an old George Foreman, you know, he can use that jab. So, you know, I actually think there's quite a few things Joyce could do here. He can batter Joyce with the jab if he wants to, like he did Dubois, but he doesn't need to. He could also just start battering him around then with the power shots. And Joyce has a high volume for a guy of his size. You know, there's no doubt about it. I just don't see what Takam could do here. I don't see him lasting the distance. So, to me, this is a real good Joyce knockout play. I don't see what people see in this fight. And I think the thing Joe Joyce has got to watch, I mean, of course, it's about making money. It's prize fighting. And he's probably looking at it like, well, if I get a fight with Joshua or actually, I don't know how with the way Hearn does stuff. I don't know if he could get a fight with Joshua, but you know, maybe you know he gets a fight with Usyk. If Usyk gets an upset, he's probably looking for something like that. Or if Usyk and Joshua don't end up fighting, you know, I think he's sincere in calling out Usyk. I think that's probably the fight he's looking at. Why I say that is he came up at an advanced age. You know, he's already on the wrong side of 35. You know, he looked good against Dubois. He looks good in his own way, you know, getting Stavern out of there, you know, beating Jennings, even though that was close. He's got his own way of being effective. But I think he's got to move now. I mean, you know, he's still human, and it's true when they say nobody beats Father Time. Nobody ultimately does. And, you know, he's a guy that he needs something to happen now. So I know he's looking for a bigger fight, but I don't think he's got much time to be playing around with the Carlos Takams of the world. He needs to get a big fight because of his age.
Yeah, that's a very good point, no doubt about it. I think, and he's kind of now beyond the rounds thing too. Like, hey, rounds don't hurt, you know. But now it's like, well, he's gone rounds, you know. So he, it is time for him to step up. I think he was just, you know, kind of just fell into him, you know, stay active or whatever. But, you know, I see him like as a plus 600 and up as an underdog, and I'm not out there putting much money, if anything, on a Carlos Takam 6-1. I just don't see it happening, no doubt about it. Any other items that you'd like to get to, John, at all?
Yeah, I just say on that one, I agree with you. I think the play on that, what the heck, it's very, very legal in the U.S. in a lot of states, including West Virginia and New Jersey, two states I'm in, you know. I think, yeah, I feel pretty good if you're looking for a gambling play on Joyce Takam. I'd go with the Joyce KO. I don't think at 40 years old with a guy as heavy and big as Joyce, I don't see how he goes the distance. So I would say that on that one. And just tying in what you said, I think it's important with the sport following the broadcast TV aspects. Yeah, it's disappointing that, and I don't know what sometimes happens with these deals. I mean, you know, Top Rank had a joint deal with Frank Warren to have, you know, his stuff in the U.S. and Warren's been working with Joyce, and now, you know, there's some new Top Rank deal, like you said, with the overseas stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, these Warren.
It seems like more of an output deal. It seems like more of an output deal to put their product on Sky Sports than we're going to get much back, you know.
Exactly, and I'm disappointed as a boxing fan because, of course, you want to see it, but also, you know, ESPN Plus, at least at this point, luckily, we don't have to pay too much for it. I have warmed to that a bit, even though it's something more you got to pay for. But it was – I really did like, you know, if it was a decent UK card, I liked that for us here. We're watching that in the afternoon, kind of like the old fights you had on in the 80s, 70s and 80s on in the afternoon on the weekend in the U.S. They would – coincidentally come on at that same time. So I like that. And, you know, I will maybe get some more with Eddie Hearn doing the DAZN stuff when you get a decent card. But, yeah, this is something you'd like to have like that. And I thought Top Rank had some affiliate deals or with Takam and Joyce, frankly. I don't know, it's something what you said, but we're not, you know, apparently we're not going to get this one, which is disappointing.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I'm not trying to go to Fight TV and pay a pay-per-view or anything like that, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just the old, well, not even that long ago, Wade, that, you know, we were able to get the fights. And not usually, not even talking about live streaming them, but they end up on YouTube or Daily Motion or whatever. So you can find it someplace. But, yeah, we'll see where this goes. Because, like I said, I mean, Sky Sports is like when right now, as far as off of Matchroom, it's like obviously AJ is still on that deal. I think they have one deal left or one fight deal in general. And then Dillian White. Dillian White, it's funny because Eddie wants to keep in a stay busy fight, so he doesn't fight on Sky Sports. go figure. So he'll be on his own. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what that really means. But, you know, I don't know. It does kind of suck. Sometimes those BT Sports cards can be pretty good. Obviously, Matchroom has more and usually is more quality. But right now, if you have a Matchroom in the UK, any quality they have, like real quality or consistent quality, is DAZN here, Matchroom USA here. They don't have really a great, schedule just yet. But you look at some of the fights he's going to have in his backyard, and you're like, those are pretty mid-level. Some of them going to be good, but they're not brilliant, like a promoter would say. Well, I appreciate you taking time out, and you have yourself a good night.
For having me, as always, good talking with you.
Yep, no problem. Take it easy. All righty. So, I'm going to play a little bit of audio. And this comes from, what's his name, Bernie the Boxer. There's been plenty of stuff that this video, I think it's around 2,000 views or something like that. He's inside the camp of Terrence Crawford. He's been able to say a whole bunch of stuff. And from what I could see, I haven't followed his channel consistently or nothing like that. So maybe there is a video he's taken down or a segment they've edited. But from what I see, he has somewhat free range to talk about Terrence Crawford's career. And he definitely has been battling people, Spence fans, you know, coming into his chat, I'm sure, and in his comments, saying a bunch of stuff, I'm sure. So it is kind of a battle, but it's actually, he's got 120 comments and it's almost 2,000. So that's pretty good. But there was just on his channel, and this is just from July 13th. This is something that we assume would happen. Well, we shouldn't say assume. We hope that would happen with Terrence Crawford. It only makes sense to happen at this point. For Terrence Crawford, he's made a damn good amount of money, especially on this extension. And there's really no point in staying with Top Rank because they don't, you know, they have Josh Taylor coming up. You know, they don't really have much in the way of welterweights, as we know. So, pretty obvious to do this type of move. We can only hope it happens. But here's what Team Crawford, or members of Team Crawford, not Terrence Crawford, not Bob Arum, not even his trainer / manager, but this is coming from Bernie the Boxer, which I'm not trying to, this isn't a horrible source, let's put it that way. It's not just some random YouTube guy who's just a fanboy of Crawford. Now, he's in his team, so he's probably a fanboy, which is understandable, right? But here's what they were talking about not long ago when Terrence is going to be done with his contract, as we know, in October.
All this bullshit back and forth. Oh, y'all re-signed the Top Rank. Let me tell you one thing. The reason why we re-signed the Top Rank, because that was the first person that gave us a chance to sign on the top level.
And I respect that, by the way. They said this a couple times in the video, what he just said. I do respect that part of it. That part makes sense.
Let me get y'all a little history lesson. Since you motherfuckers know so much, y'all don't even be getting out of pocket, but y'all niggas just saying stupid shit. All y'all niggas who boxing in God's name, TKO Boxing, signed for TKO Boxing for probably $500 for nickels and pennies, my nigga. And then Top Rank, we went 13-0, knocking everybody out. Top Rank is the first right? Fast forward. We know what we have. Bernie, we all know what we have.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's take Breeders' Prescott. We moved up from 135.
We're talking about the way they got in, how they weren't signed to top rank right away or anybody like that, and just kind of making their way up.
Upper death fight to Bud.
And why, you know, and why they decided to stay loyal, which I respect. It just of late, the respect hasn't been two ways.
That's when the fucking boxing world opened their eyes. Like, oh, who is this man that dominated
this guy
that's heavy? Knew what people saw loyalty back.
Ain't no question.
They sold us dreams. They said he was going to do this. They promised us the Pacquiao fight. They promised us all these things. And then when it came to the corner, then it didn't happen. And we stuck. Just like many other people was. Oscar De La Hoya left top rank. Manny Pacquiao left top rank. Floyd Mayweather left top rank for the same reason, my nigga. If y'all know y'all history, y'all know the best fighters in the world was with top rank at some point in time, and the business brother ranked, and they left and got their shit right. But while y'all fine, don't blame Spence. Y'all tell Spence to stay at 147 for another fight, and we'll fight him next when we're a free agent, and we can go knock on Al Heyman's door like, hey, we're not with by them no more, so what's all excuse now? What y'all want to do now, though? Okay? It's one thing y'all don't want to do business with Bob Bell. I get that. Okay, I understand.
So we're going to play a little bit more. I'm just going to take a little break here so we don't get popped or anything. But, you know, this sounds promising, right?
I understand that a little bit.
Yes, sir.
But when Terrence becomes a free agent and he's knocking on the PBC offices like, hey, I don't got no paperwork on me now. Ain't no ankle monitor on me now. What's up?
Yes, sir.
Then what are they going to do? And then where y'all going to be at? Okay? When this real shit come out. All y'all laughing and joking and talking about resumes and all this shit, y'all can laugh and joke all y'all want because we're going to get the last laugh. This thing is coming to fruition right now.
Yes, sir.
I'm not going to speak on it, but this thing's coming to fruition right motherfucking now, and all this fucking laughter is going to stop, and it's going to get real, real quick.
Ooh.
October is the day. It is the final month of the contract. It's either one fight or October, okay? We have a disgruntled promotional company that's promoting us.
Yes.
They're not going to give us shit, but they owe us $4 million, so we're going to fight the beta for $4 motherfucking million, you bitch ass nigga.
So they're basically saying what everybody wants them to say in this thing. Now, this is boxing. And let's not forget DAZN's out there with some money. They could theoretically come up and sneak him away and give him a higher guarantee or whatever. But then that kind of goes back to, okay, who signed at welterweight with DAZN? Now, I know people say, you know, Virgil Ortiz. Okay, cool. You're still a golden boy, but you're at least on DAZN. So, okay, Virgil Ortiz. Okay, who else? You know what I mean? I mean, okay, Regis Progre and Mikey Garcia fights, you know. By the way, it sounds like that fight is going to get done. It's just a matter of what Canelo's going to do so they know when to put it out, which is a great fight, by the way. Love that fight. And that fighter establishes himself to an extent, well, a lot at 140, odd, but also, you know, if Tank comes knocking at 140 ever, that's a big win to have and be like, hey, I'm right here. But we'll see. We'll see. But just a little audio there to kind of, you know, say, hey, you know, this is here. You know what I mean? And this is actually what we're going to do. And I thought that they were going to do that. I do remember the Twitter beef they had a couple years ago where all of a sudden they had a phone call and they figured it all out, they said. And maybe that was part of that. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say that. But this is Progre, actually, on his Twitter. Regis Progre versus Mikey Garcia, date TBA. TBA. To be announced. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. That's a really, really good fight. That's the best fight they have that would be on their schedule at this point. Couple other just fight news stuff. Did I mention last week I can't remember if I had. Actually, I got a message. Okay, so someone messaged me saying that I thought Shakur Stevenson had a below, like a subpar outing against his last opponent. And how come I'm not saying the same thing about Jermall Charlo? Well, first of all, look who they're fighting, okay? Let's establish that. Look who Shakur fought and look who Charlo fought. You just find it out about Castaño. I thought he narrowed defeated Lara. Whatever. It is what it is. That fight's done. I thought he won, but it was a draw. Whatever, right? There weren't a bunch of people screaming robbery then. When I thought, you know, it was another draw. But so right then and there, the level of competition from Shakur and Charlo in this fight, the two fights, that's different, okay? But I did actually say I don't think that was Charlo's best performance, and I think actually we can get more out of Castaño too, to be honest with you. And I broke that down earlier. I'm not going to keep going over stuff. But just so you know, I don't think that was his best. I really don't. I don't. But I also can see the difference there. You know what I mean? I can see the difference in opponents, right? Luda Bella actually came out some news here recently. We know Charles Conwell will now be on the Jake Paul Tyron Woodley undercard, along with Amanda Serrano. And that's what I was going to say. Did I say that near the end last week? I think I did, that Amanda Serrano was going to be on the undercard of Paul and Woodley. And I'm really excited for her. The tickets, I think, already went on sale. It's going to be in Cleveland, which is kind of dope. But Charles Conwell, and he's from Cleveland, so that's dope too. You know, when you look at Conwell, you look at Fundora, and you look at Tim Zhu, among a couple other young 154-pounders, but those stand out as prospects right now. He's going to fight Mark DeLuca, which, you know, where he's at is not – that's not a bad fight, I don't believe. I think that's a pretty good fight. So I'm just happy about that. I think that is freaking great. It's a good look. It's a good platform for him. I don't know what the pay-per-view sales will be, but it'll get a lot of attention. He'll probably come away with more social media followers and whatnot, right? Which, you know, adds up after a while. So yeah, I'm really happy about that. That's like I said, the pro Greg Garcia. It sounds like they have an agreement, so that would be on DAZN. Also on that Woodley Paul undercard pay-per-view, Ivan Brancic will fight undefeated prospect Montana Love. So that's kind of interesting. I think that's the first. Is that the first time he's been back? Did Brancic fight once? Maybe he fought once really quick. I can't remember. More DiBella news. A federal judge has ruled in favor of DiBella Entertainment in its lawsuit against Shaki Foster. Who was seeking a preliminary injunction that would have allowed him to deal directly with other boxing promoters. The judge did not publish the reasons for his ruling. I know that can happen just by following this. Joseph Diaz Jr., coming off a solid win over Fortuna, said, "I want Devin next. I'm going to do everything possible to make that happen." And by the way, he should be close to that mandatory spot now since other people did before, right? Freddie Roach came out and said Tyson Fury wants him to train him. I wonder, is that full-time training? Or just be in the camp? Wasn't he minorly in the camp before in the first fight? Or am I tripping? John Fury, this was some boxing scene actually not long ago. I think today. Today. Wilder cherry picked, this is John Fury saying it. Wilder cherry picked Tyson twice. Third may cost him his career. And to me, first of all, that's kind of dissing your guy a little bit. But here's the quotes. Like Tyson got cherry picked with Deontay Wilder twice. because if they never saw Tyson's eye hanging off against Otto Wallen, a terrible performance, they wouldn't have wanted the second fight. But they saw Otto Wallen fight and thought, yep, Wilder can't lose. Wilder will chin him. They cherry-picked him the first, thinking he's been out of the ring for years. He's been abusing himself and all that. We can't lose. But every time Tyson, when he's in the ring, he changes his full job. He can look terrible in training camp, but when he gets in that ring, he's a different man, different animal. And they got it wrong twice, and they'll get it wrong for a third time. But the whole thing is, that's just bullshit, if we're being honest. Because, first of all, to cherry pick him the second time, that doesn't line up with real events. That's just like people saying, oh, they've over-marinated Hurd and Charlo. Well, go back to after he beat Lara, like I said before. They didn't fucking milk it. People started losing. That's what it was. But this one is just kind of funny. Like, I think Fury's going to win the trilogy. I picked him to win the second one. The only time I didn't pick him, or the only reason I didn't pick him to win the first one is because I just didn't know what we had, you know, with Fury. I just didn't know. He was still a little overweight. He wasn't in tip-top shape. I just didn't know. I know he had a bunch of camps. Didn't know, you know. But the reality in that is, remember, they already negotiated the rematch. The first one was on Showtime. They negotiated the second fight, sent a contract over. Tyson Fury had it for a week, he said, and then signed a more long-term lucrative deal with Top Rank, which I'm not dissing him for doing that. But to sit there and say, oh, they wouldn't have fought him if they didn't see that Otto Wallen fight. Dude, they sent a contract to him, and they agreed to terms. So that's just nonsense. That's just not nonsense. Someone sent that to me, that article, and it's like, all right, dude, whatever. And then another thing, when it comes to – I tweeted last week, according to Bob Arum, the Fury Wilder 3 gate was sitting at $15 million, scaled for a $19 million sellout. Arum said this to Joe Habib in a recent interview. This is just facts. As far as this is according to Bob Arum. Okay, I didn't say this is a fact like I know the gate number, you know, because I don't. I know what the tickets were priced at in the second time compared to the third time. I know that they were moving pretty well, but I don't know, you know, and what would be a bomb? It's hard to call. Let's just say it's only going to be 15. And I hate to say the word only, but let's just say at his number there, he says it's at 15. I also heard Frank Warren say 14. Let's just say it's 14. Is that a huge bomb at the box office? I mean, I know the first one almost did 17, but would you categorize that as a bomb? I mean, how many fights nowadays get over? I've gone over this before. Even a million, but 2 and 3 million are far and few between throughout the year. And then if you go over 5 or 10 million, even that Canelo fight that they sold, what, 64,000 tickets, I think the final number was, and they had attendance over 7,000 or 70,000. That was 9 million, right? It didn't hit 10. So I don't know. Would you call that if it was 13? Let's just go to 12 million. Is 12 million really a failure at the box office, though? That I don't know. I was wondering about the UK, you know, how the UK couldn't travel, and I, you know, but it seemed like it was selling pretty good. But I don't know that to be a fact. My whole point was, we will know that as a fact. And part of this Bob Arum stuff lends itself to, well, he knows. I mean, the guy's not afraid to mislead people, as we know. I've criticized him plenty, but he also knows that now he's on record multiple times saying what the gate is. Not that he really worries about being a fool or made a fool, I should say. But it is what it is. It is what it is. According to Bob Arum, I didn't say that was factual, but it is factual that Bob said it. Doesn't mean it's factual. Anyway, that's enough of that. I just had to answer some messages off that, or at least least the ones I thought that were at least somewhat worthy to answer. Of course, you know, you get messages where you're like, oh, really? Okay, cool. Coppinger was going off. Not sure what fight Espinoza was watching. Wasn't the same fight me and everybody else saw. Castaño won convincingly, which I just did. I didn't see him winning 8 or 9 rounds, dude. You know, like I said, I had it a draw, but I, like, if I had to lean one way, it would be Castaño. Totally. I have already said that. But I can't do the 9-3 route. I think 8 rounds is pushing it. Like John said, he thinks it's pushing it to give Charlo 6 rounds. I couldn't give him 7 rounds, right? Or 8 rounds, that's for sure. Definitely not 9. But I can't just give 8 and 9 away to Castaño either, to be honest with you. Charlo got, this is the boxing Twitter segment too. And by the way, Portland, if you want to join in, feel free. I'm just kind of going through some stuff. I'm not sure if Carcino's going to make it here. He's got a little time though, so we're going to hang on. What is it? I think there's some other. Oh yeah, there's some really funny stuff. This is a really funny thing here. This is fucking Rick Glaser, who is just, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, there was a time years ago where Rick Glaser, I mean, he has experience in this business, no doubt about it, more than the vast majority of people involved in boxing, from a media or part-time media or whatever, right? No doubt. You can't deny that, right? But the guy's a bullshitter, and he has been for quite some time. And he just says ridiculous stuff, and we know he's just anti-Heyman. But this shit, this is funny here. So after watching Jermell Charlo really get good handle from Brian Castaño, now we see why I've been saying his brother Jermall Charlo would never beat Canelo. He'd walk right through Jermall Charlo. You can have that take all by itself. There's no need to. Jermell and Jermall don't fight the same for one, right? I mean, at 54, Jermall's power was vicious, right? It's not the same at 160. And I do favor Canelo. Well, maybe if Canelo had to come 160, it would even the fight a little bit more because he'd have to, you know, lose weight or whatever. But I do favor at 168. Canelo beating Charlo, Jermall. But to sit there and say, based off what we saw Jermell fighting someone, when Castaño comes forward and throws way more punches and has a different style than Canelo too. Like, it's just so funny to shit on them both. You see that? But it was overall shitting on the PBC. Like, how are you going to say, based off Castaño, Jermell, Charlo, this is why I think Jermall's going to get his ass kicked by Canelo. Can't you just say that straight up? Why would you need to say all that extra stuff? Like, why are you saying, well, you know, the fact that he did that to Mel. I mean, people are still saying, this is why I don't think Jermell can beat Canelo. Guys, he's at 54. He's not going up to 68. This is the wrong brother, dude. This is what I mean by, can't you focus on two things, a great fight, and I guess the rematch, right, and also that one bad scorecard? But that one bad scorecard, like I said, happens so often that it's like, it's just so funny that you got to find a way to do that. Pacquiao could beat Spence and then become president of the Philippines, and I don't know if there's any more insane sentence that exists in the realm of possibility right now. And that's saying something. That is true. I'm not sure if he's going to be president, but yeah, that's crazy. Yo, boxing fans, if a fight is within 2 rounds of your scorecard, you can't scream robbery. Thank you. It'll be interesting to see how soon or what future card Nelson Vasquez, who had that bad scorecard. His second one, by the way, I forgot to mention that. He had a Poche up on Glanton, and Glanton was winning that fight. Basically asking, you know, when's he going to work next? You wonder if promoters or managers would be hesitant to have him judge a fight for a world title holder, contender, prospect. And that's a fair point. Now, you can put in, like, an appeal. There's just no automatic, no, we don't want them. Well, both sides can put in appeal, and sometimes that does work. This is a good one. Golovkin Andrade would possibly be for the ring middleweight title, which GGG has always coveted, and would net him a 10-figure payday, yet GGG has no apparent interest in making the fight. But then he follows up, I straight up said Golovkin turned down $1 billion and got 100 likes. This app kills me, man. When I first saw it, I was like, he's not saying 10 figures, is he? Because it's not even 9 figures. Like, this is funny, dude. But that was a good troll. I got to do it. Not trying to sign Canelo to some sort of deal with the leverage you have would be business malpractice. Businesses don't grow magically on their own. Money doesn't make itself. Criticizing Heyman for trying seems odd. Yes, just like, you know, they already said they do a one. That's been confirmed by more than one source now, legit sources, that they, a one-fight deal they're willing to do with Canelo to fight on Plant, or to fight Plant on Fox. Now, why wouldn't you try to offer a three-fight deal to him, though? You know, just like, I get why Eddie was trying to offer 3- and 6-fight deals and all that originally. I get all that. But when it's Canelo, why wouldn't you? Especially, and I know Eddie talks about, well, that he wouldn't be a free agent. Well, he hasn't been a free agent the last couple. Well, he hasn't been a free agent in a while, but he wasn't a free agent the last 2 fights. He was signed for a 2-fight deal with DAZN. So he wasn't a free agent then. So all of a sudden now he's got to be a free agent? Like, he's a free agent right now. It's up to him to decide what he wants to do. If he decides he wants it at DAZN because he's going to get more upfront money, then Plant has to go to DAZN. Pretty even stuff here, because Canelo is that's the difference. I'm getting these texts, though, or messages saying, oh, what's the difference? Oh, Charlo can't go fight Andre. That's a totally different scenario, dude. Golovkin and Canelo are the people you go to DAZN. This whole Andre thing is so overblown. The dude literally had a chance to fight a one-off fight on Showtime to fight Jermall Charlo. He said it himself, and he chose to take a lucrative deal. I get it, but don't come back. Don't go sign a deal and be like, you're ducking me. Nah, dude, you're not. You know what I mean? You're not. And everybody thinks, not everybody. Some people think, he'll expose Canelo. Oh, Andre will, at 168, Andre's just going to expose Canelo? Come on, dude. This is Calix Boxing 2.0. Follow him on Twitter and also on his YouTube channel. Charlo is the only fighter I can think of who fought all other top 5 opponents in his division. He had a close fight with the number 2, and now he's exposed. You don't want to see the best fight and the best. Stop lying. You want to debate purse splits and nut hug your favorite fighters. God bless you, Joe. Calix there. Hell yeah, dude. That is such a great fight. Or great fight. great tweet, man. Great tweet. Like, come on, dude. Fight the best fight in the best so you lose or you think someone lost. All right. Move on. You keep telling us how, you know, these fighters are afraid to, you know, risk it all. And then when they risk it all, you shit on them like this. It's just stupid. It's just dumb. It really is. I actually saw this earlier. I'm glad someone sent this to me. This is in Boxing Knowledge, the FaceTime group, but it was on Twitter. Castaño KOs Canelo in 7 rounds. Canelo fighting British bums. Jermall fought real competition. Who has Canelo fought? So Castaño is going to go for we're on the wrong weight class, guys. We're not even at 160. This dude's going to stop Canelo in 7 rounds, who just fought Castaño. Couldn't stop Charlo, though. And he's talking about Jermall fought real comp. Dude, that's Jermell. You got the wrong Charlo brother, dude. Who has Canelo fought, he says. I don't know. The best resume in boxing? That could be who he fought. Lou DiBella, all networks should utilize the ring ratings as a resource, but the entire system of rating sanctioning titles needs to be turned on its ass. turned on its head, I'd say is better. And Gabriel Montoya, shouts out to Gabe, if only there was an organization full of writers who could investigate and expose the horrible ranking system. You're bringing up the ring ratings. They have writers at the ring, right? Okay. PBC fighters are literally modern-day slaves who have no say about their careers. Modern-day slave, they're getting paid healthy, so calm the fuck down. They can't think for themselves, can't choose who they fight. They can only do what Al tells them to. I find that disturbing, but it's their own choice. I mean, Al could have had Chavez Jr. fight a bunch of his dudes, but he even left to go fight other people. Amir Khan left. Danny Jacobs at middleweight, you know, when it was literally nothing there, you know, on the PBC side, went and fought Golovkin over at HBO. Like, how many people are coming over to the PBC and how many people are going to the zone? We saw Jose Ramirez do it for a bunch of money. It's times here and there. Now, if you're a clear B-side opponent and you're not tied to the three platforms, then, yeah, you can fight all over the place. But to sit there and say they have no choice, I mean, really, dude, they have no choice. So why did this Undisputed even happen? Oh, because Charlo wanted it. No, because only Al wanted it. Charlo really didn't want it. Castaño didn't want it. Like, come on, dude. It's just silly, dude. But that doesn't surprise me. Okay, on the rematch, he says, I see this going like Harrison 2. This is Castaño Charlo. Castaño was badly hurt in the 10th, and I think Mel would stop him. I thought Mel lost at least 8 rounds, maybe 9, but I think the rematch, he'd KO him. If Jermell KOs Castaño in the rematch, people will say, in hindsight, that the draw was fair and that 9-3 scorecard for Jermell wasn't ridiculous. If Castaño and Jermell never fought again, most people would agree that Castaño got robbed. Why are you so worried about this stuff? So you're saying don't fight the rematch? So you're saying don't become the undisputed lineal guy. Castaño, don't do it. You know, what's probably his second biggest payday maybe. Well, it'll be his first now, but I'm saying Spence will come up. And that goes in line with what we're talking about. If Charlo was such a huge, huge name and Al was protecting him, why did he lose to Harrison in a fight a lot of people actually thought, you know, Harrison lost the fight and Charlo won in the first one. I know I did. And I've said this before. I had Harrison up 6-4 in the rematch, though, until Charlo knocked him out. But I thought it was a pretty clear win. I thought he beat him the first time. But why would he even lose that fight then if they were trying to keep Charlo undefeated? I think he got wronged in that fight, and he got helped out here with that shitty scorecard. But think it deeper, like I said when John was on here. Think this deeper, though. Think the long – it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And we know Spence is going up to 54 at some point. Shit, he's been saying this before lately. But he's a big boy, and he has problems making weight after a while. He already said, I'm going to fight Pacquiao, then I'm going to try to fight Crawford. If not, I'm probably going to go to 54. Well, if Castaño won the lineal title and was undisputed, wouldn't that be a perfect opponent for Spence to fight for undisputed at the weight class? Like, do you guys think about it, or are you just following media members that are fanboys? And I understand it's hard to differentiate, right? Because it's just hard because you've been following some of these guys since like the mid-90s, late-90s, early-2000s, and then when the PBC come around, a lot of them are just biased towards it, straight up. Just straight up, they just are. It's just obvious. And so I guess that skewed your mind because they're a trusted source you had all the time. But Jermell and Spence aren't fighting, dude. They got the same trainer. They're good friends. They've been friends since they're little kids. Now, if they were just friends and had opposite trainers, I'd say fight, fuck the friend stuff. But usually when you have top-level guys at both weight classes, that shit just doesn't happen, dude. So if Brian – he technically probably want Castaño to win because that would help Spence, who's the bigger money-making guy. Like, you guys got to think this through at least. Like, critical think a little bit, dude, just a little bit. And it also, dude, in him getting a draw here for Charlo, it actually helps him because now some of these other fights that maybe people, I'm not really worried. Let's see if Julian Williams comes back and looks good in a fight, people will probably want to see. I've always liked that style, you know what I mean? I think he can beat him, you know? Yeah, I don't know. That's the beauty at 154. There's so much fun fights to be still made. The draw was good for Charlo. His problem has been he's never had a rival at 154, although Harrison beat him. Many didn't feel he lost that fight. Heard lost before they could fight. If he beat Castaño, who would he be looking forward to him fighting? Glover rematch. I mean, that is a good point. And that was going to be a prop, you know, because how do you sell that Glover rematch with a first-round knockout? We know as hardcores that first-round knockouts can happen. But it's like how many more, let's say Lubin fights Fandora and somebody else, like how many more fights does Lubin have to fight to get to a title shot too? I mean, people get to title shots pretty easy these days. So, I mean, I don't know. You know what I mean? Okay, Charlo got a draw in an undisputed matchup against an undefeated champion. They'll rematch. If he wins, he's still headed there, basically like headed to top 10. The confusing part for me is that we're told losses don't matter. All the greats have losses. Then when someone loses, then we are heavily critical. And that's a great point. I think he was talking about. Oh, here's someone sent me a list. Sebastian Fandora, Tim Zhu, Charles Conwell. Someone said don't forget Ammo Williams. And there's a couple more beyond that that might make some noise too. The IBF, which is pretty stingy, this is Briggs. I would normally agree, because they're talking about IBF and WBO, they won't step in. But the IBF Mando, Mirzaliev, he stepped aside twice to allow Charlo to face a bigger name opposition. Correct me if I'm wrong. They need to sign off on him to keep him involved with the belt because at some point they're going to give him the shot. And the IBF, as we know, don't mess around. But that's one of those fights where just drop the belt then. Who cares? Just like the WBO, just drop it. You know, who cares? Who cares? So Carcino did not make it in, unfortunately. I tried to tell him was that Monday I did the show? I told him that we were doing it this tonight, and I gave him a heads-up text. So, unfortunately, we don't get the Charlo brother barrage from Garcino. I'm kind of bummed out. The media in boxing has so many fanboys and people in search of sponsorship deals willing to spew endless amounts of emotional bullshit to produce views, listens, and impressions. That goes for the part-time media as well. Cheating thing. I actually tweeted that earlier today. So I think I'm going to shut this puppy down. Is there any news that I didn't get to? This is Michaela Mayer. I'm not going to be fighting bitches for money I can make at the bar serving drinks like the old days. Pay me what I'm worth. I like that. And then she was talking about that new, the ESBC boxing game. This is what she said. She's basically like, no, I don't give away my likeness for free, meaning her value as a fighter. The women's contract for the ESBC game has a non-negotiable, while the men's was negotiable. My manager, George Ruiz, has trained me well. We know our worth. Good call. Very good call. All right. I think that's about going to do it. Okay, somebody sent me this. This is Jake Caldrone Boxing Talk. I know where this is going. Reports of Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder trilogy fight only selling 30% of the ticket sales, possibly pay-per-view disaster on the 24th. That would have sold way below their second fight. The fight is now being pushed to October. Like, as far as the gate goes, that 25 to 30% talk comes from Eddie Hearn, too. So if you're going to sit there and diss what Bob said, which I was just reporting what Bob said, I didn't say take that as fact, then you're going to have to do the same thing to Eddie Hearn. He's the one throwing out that 25 to 30%. Because, you know, he's made so many big fights in Vegas, too, right? Eddie Hearn's made a ton of big fights in Las Vegas. He hasn't. And Eddie Hearn's the shit in a lot of ways, don't get me wrong. But calm down on this one. So you're telling me we're going to fake a COVID test to improve the boxing or the ticket sales? We're going to improve ticket sales by, I don't believe they're offering, as far as I know, I have yet to hear a refund thing. Okay? I have yet to hear anything about a refund. Tickets are still on sale. Even if there were, let's say there were 5,000 tickets left with 2.5 weeks to go. That's like 9,000 or 10,000 tickets sold. Do you realize what 10,000 tickets at that price point can do? It's a big ass gate. Like I said, the first fight did about 17 million. I think it was what, 16.8 or some shit. I don't remember. 16.9, something like that. Now, did I anticipate it be higher? No, I didn't, because the UK fans couldn't fight, come over. They couldn't come over and fight and drink Guinness and drink the MGM out of business like they did for the Hatton fight. They made them run out of beer. So that did surprise me, not the ticket prices, when I saw they were selling pretty well originally. And then, yeah, the ticket prices were going to start to go down, but how is vaguely pushing something to October going to help the ticket sales? Now we're adding more doubt to this event. One of the fighters, Fury, is rumored to, and I've heard this from Jake Donovan and others, that he was having problems selling his tickets. You know, to be fair, a lot of the UK is banned from coming here right now. I think that's going to open up and that will help tickets. But remember, the rumor is he's going back to the UK for a while. Will he come back? I mean, a lot of people, my point is to sell more tickets at the box office for the live gate. How does making this vague cancellation postponement thing, how does that improve the sales for sure? Because right now they didn't reset the prices and put them back on sale so the UK fans could gobble them up that could travel here now in October, by October, supposedly, right? They didn't do that. They just kept them how they are. So the tickets are already sold. So I guess you gotta try to sell them. If you've already bought one and you can't make it that October, what is it, October 9th? Once again, critical think some of this stuff. They didn't put the tickets back on, well, they put them back on sale, but they didn't start fresh. Now, if they started fresh, probably because they don't want to lose that gate that they got right now, right? But that kind of lends itself to me thinking that Bob's pretty close to his thing. Now, whether that's 12 or 13 or 14 or 15, I don't know. But I follow ticket sales based off the original pricing, the real, you know, ticket, like Ticketmaster or AXS or whatever, right? And you know, you can look on the patterns of what seats are sold and ones aren't. You could tell some of them are taken out or whatever, right? You can see stuff when something's not selling well. And then also on the secondary market. I mean, if you look at some of these tickets for the secondary market, of course they were going to be high because they had to buy them. I don't know. Like, if they only had 4,000 or 5,000 left to sell for 2.5 weeks, they're going to sell a 1,000 or two because the hardcore fight fans at that point are going to buy them when the prices go down. So this whole thing of me thinking that it's going to do, like, I just took Bob's word and, dude, it's going to do 20 million now that the UK came over. It's not that. My point is we're going to find out what it is. We literally get to break down which ticket price sold the best and created the most money. It literally gets broken down like that. So these are facts that are real that we don't have to depend on too large of a bullshit media that don't put everything in perspective like they didn't do with that arbitration. They just one-sided it. They just listen to Bob, and that's it. That's not what I'm doing. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Hopefully we get some kind of action fight that just burns up the hardcore boxing Twitter internet, right? And it's just something to talk about. It's going to be great. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I'll just be honest. I really don't know if that's going to happen. Okay? Yeah, I think that's about it. I got another text from basically saying the same damn thing here. Anyway, hold on. Hold on, Portland, are you ready now? You pressed 1. Let me check here. All of a sudden you pressed 1. Let me see here. Sorry, this is dead air. My bad. If not, that's cool. Okay, he's ready. Okay, cool. All right, we're going to go to Portland, and then we're going to shut down the show. All right, 503 Portland, a regular caller who brings it anytime he can. What's going on, man? How the hell are you, buddy?
Mexicano salguito de guerra, el acero ha prestado el rigor, y retiemble en sus centros la tierra al sonoro rugir del gallo.
Yo, what up, Chris? Hey, yo, thanks for having me on. Yo, I know I hit the button late, but yo, everything's going good over here in beautiful Oregon. But how you doing, Chris? How's everything, brother?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. I'm glad I looked up and I saw the press one. I was like, hold on. That's you.
Yeah. Thanks.
I'm doing good.
Hell yeah.
Man.
Thanks, brother.
Good.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I thought that would be a lot faster than a text message, you know, because I had that right here in my hand. So, but cool, brother. But yeah, let's get into it. But first, I just want to say the national anthem. I know he's Argentinian, but the national anthem goes to, Gassano, this last weekend for his performance, because he fought like a warrior, like a true blood and guts warrior. But before that, I just wanted to mention that the co-main event, before I get into the main event, I just wanted to mention the co-main event. What's his name? Rolando Rolly. Man, what can I say about
him? Oh, yeah.
I've seen his fight, the one that was what's that? The COVID era. I remember it was like a showbox, or it was like a But he didn't, like, I mean, the guy,
the
you know, kind
Martinez
of,
fight? The guy who
unboxed
him?
It was like,
yeah,
that one. And, I thought he was going to kind of fight the same, but this one, man, this one kind of got opened my eyes a little bit because, dude, he was fighting, it's really dirty fighting. The guy, he did some pushing with the knockdowns, when he scored, like, some good hooks, he would push him down. And, I think those shots kind of made him, when he would push him down, it just made him look a little bit more worse than it was, especially that last, the finishing punch there for Rolando, when he pushed him, I believe it was like a left hook, and then he like kind of shoves him with his shoulder, and I thought it was too dirty. I thought he should have been penalized. I mean, he was penalized, but like I thought, I don't know, that last knockdown shouldn't have been counted. They should have gave that other kid, the kid, kind of a more time to kind of adjust I don't know. But the guy, he won. He moves on with his career. And also, too, if I could say something, man, he got booed at the end of the fight. And, that to me, I think that's what – I think people – in his position, I think that's what he would like in my opinion, just cause like, I think in boxing, it's better, like more revenue. What I'm talking about, you get more money if you're hated than you are loved. So I think, you know what I mean? I think it's just perfect.
It sucks,
got,
but it's
you know,
true.
Yeah. And also he called out Tank at the end of that fight. I mean, now, holy shit, if they make that fight, it's exciting just because I would like to see Rolando be tested after that fight, because that fight was a little too dirty for me, man. I like a clean fight. I like, mano a mano. No one's like, doing some dirty shit like that. So, but shout out to Rolando. He moves forward in his career and, makes noise in the division, because now after that fight, I actually do want to stay tuned and not miss any more of his fights, because holy crap, like, I mean, if he's going to – I mean, in all honesty, if he's going to fight like that, and, it's awesome. It's going to be entertaining to see is what I just want to say about So as far as that, Rolando did good. And
he's
also
a good
get to the
– He's a funny dude. Very funny dude.
Yeah. He is he's a pretty funny dude. And, he's definitely a character and definitely somebody to watch out now in the division. Or in his fights, but I really doubt he gets that Tank fight just because it's pretty early in his career, right? So, but as far as that the main event, let's go to the main event, Charlo, man, Charlo Castano, and bro, there's a lot of mixed feelings about this. Some people, are okay with a draw. Some people are saying a robbery, and I gotta say, my opinion, I thought Castano deserved the win. I thought he did enough to get the win. This is boxing. Charlo was the hometown guy and, the A-side treatment. So, I just thought, in my opinion, Castiano put the work on him. He would get he was pushing the bigger man. He was pushing him to the ropes. He would land some solid clean punches and he would mix it up. He was throwing combinations, and he was getting, like, Charlo was trying to be the counterpuncher, but I just felt he didn't throw enough clean shots for me to give him those give him those rounds. And when Castiano would put the pressure, it was working. It was, there were some punches landing and some punches missing on the shoulders and all that. But, man, you can't not miss his work. Like, that just volume of punches of
you
coming
tell
forward.
When he landed. When that left hook
right
hand landed, you could clearly see it.
Yeah, definitely. And, but you got to give a big shout out to Charlo for, second round where he was able to hit him or stun him with that left hook. The 10th round?
I thought he was going to get knocked down in that 10th round, man. That was close call. Oh, shit, here we go.
Here we go. I thought I was on my toes. I was yelling at the TV, survive, survive, move, doing my thing. And, he did exactly what I wanted him to do, keep the distance. And, at that moment when he was hurt is what I'm talking about. But,
yeah.
Like, as far as Charlo, mm-hmm. too, Charlo, I just kind of like he – I think once he had him hurt, he should have definitely put the pressure on his ass and broke him because there was moments
that first
during that time
too.
When he was hurt. Yeah,
especially
there was moments where he was landing. Yeah. He was landing and he was hurting him, and you could tell his legs were not underneath him. Like he was, every punch was,
mm-hmm.
it was affecting him really
his
bad.
His body was moving.
So,
yep.
Yeah, definitely. But man, credit to Castiano to get through that moment. And Charlo, I don't know, he kind of messed up in that moment. I thought he should have taken more advantage of it instead of trying to pot shot him and, pick a shot. So I thought if he would have rushed him, and I just feel like if he would have rushed him and just try to go for the kill, I thought he would have got a good knockdown or at least, would have been able to hurt him more to maybe a possible finish. But as far as that fight was definitely exciting. I'm glad I didn't miss out on that one because that one was fucking, it was sick, man.
A lot of
back and forth,
a lot of drama,
Yeah,
and you're
hell yeah, bro.
Maybe landing that counter left hook kind of thought, okay, I'll just keep doing this. I'll jab, throw my right hand, and then I'll look for that left hook. And maybe it did put him in counter mode too much, and he's not known as just this counter puncher. Even when he boxed more, he can counter.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, but he was back in the day. He wasn't known to be this knockout counter artist either. So maybe if he hadn't, landed that early and woke his ass up, and it, had him kind of looking like he, like you said, he's going to get knocked down. Maybe that would have, maybe he would have actually pushed the pace as it went. But yeah, you're right. It was interesting too. Charlo said something in the post fight that I thought was really smart. That he, Castagno wasn't throwing, four and five and six and seven punch combos at a time, because when he tried to do that, that's when he got clipped. Otherwise,
yeah,
it was just like constant 2-3 punch combos, not blowing up and throwing 80 punches around like he used to. He was more economical, more smarter,
definitely chose his punches wisely and didn't gas out, didn't want to blow the moment and all that. And but yeah, man, as far as Castano, man, I just want to say about Castano, like, I don't, even though it was a draw, I don't think he loses in any way, like, his stock-wise. Like, I think it just goes up being competitive in this fight. You know what I mean? And even though it's kind of sad, I think he's got a draw with Lara, too, which is pretty crazy. A draw with Lara and a draw with Charlo. I mean, that just shows you how much of a, dangerous and dark horse this fighter really is in this division, man. So people need to watch
people
out for this
sleeping,
guy, man.
Dude.
You know what I mean?
They were sleeping on this guy, man.
Yeah, definitely. And but yeah, it's a, and also too, man. And if I could say something, he was supposed to go on his, like, he had to cancel his honeymoon, which is a an amazing story. Like, that, I mean, I'm sure that sucks for his wife, but I mean, this is a present. This is a a big moment for his career, and I just don't think he loses. I just think he actually his stock rises, and he's available for even bigger potential. Bigger fights or even a rematch now, but as far as the rematch with Charlo, I just wish in the post fight interview he was more he was more passionate, like, about, like, I want this rematch, I want it now, I want it next. He was just, he did the whole spiel that it's up to my manager Al Haymon, and then they asked him again, like, do you want to be undisputed, and he says yeah, he wants it, it's the only thing he wants, but he wants to leave that decision to Al Haymon, and I get it. You know what I mean? He's the guy, the advisor or whatever. But, man, sometimes, I would like this fight to be next, like this rematch, just to be solidified for maybe in the fall or even in the wintertime of the end of this year.
I don't know about the fall.
But,
I would say December. I'd let these guys rest a little bit. Both of them took some pretty good shots. But I hear you. I don't think, I don't think that really has a bearing on it, though, to be honest with you, because how many times do we see people – I mean, Rolly just cut out Gervonta. He's not going to get him next. So, I don't know. I hear what you're saying, but he did say he wanted the fight. And then the press conference, he said it a bunch of times. So, I think at the end of the day, he wants the fight. But I know what you're saying.
I hope.
You always hate when it's like, well, whatever works, I'm down for it. I know what you mean, the vagueness. Or when you're trying to, like, when there's a fight to be billed and a fighter doesn't say the actual name, the exact name, sometimes it's like, just say it. Just say it. Who cares? Maybe it'll help or whatever.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, he gave us that, it's up to the manager. Yeah, I hope so.
But he also
so even maybe early next
too,
year.
Yeah.
Even maybe even even like early next year would be pretty dope and everything. But I just would like to see that rematch being be done again, just because, like, it definitely deserves a re-over, because I thought in my opinion, Castano did enough to get the victory and to be unified and everything. But it's boxing, and it is what it is, bro. I mean, me and you, Chris, we've seen the bad, the ugly, the good. So, this doesn't affect us at all. So, we just, move on to the next one. So, but as far as that, like I said, Castano still moves forward with his career. I don't think this tarnishes him at all. Like I said, he's got bigger fights in the horizon.
He's going to be a people's
sure.
champ, dude. He'll be a people's
champ.
Yeah,
definitely.
Because the,
he was
two
loved,
draws
he was loved.
Against quality guys. That usually is the agreement to become a people's champ.
Yeah, definitely. And also too, man, he's got the, since he did it in Texas, you know, I got to say he's got the love of the Mexicanos too, like, you know, on his side, like even Canelo post-fight was able to talk to him and say, you know, gave his opinion about saying that he thought that Castano won the fight. So, you know what I mean? Shout out to Latinos, shout out to my people. And but yeah, man, as far as that, you know, it sucks also too, if I could comment about it. I think this weekend was supposed to be a Fury Wilder 3. You know, that sucks. It's not happening. We all you know, that we saw that that Tyson Fury that so he's got COVID and had to cancel the fight. And you know, everybody's got a different opinion. We saw the photos of him being out and about. I don't know. It's a little bit of, you know, who knows what's going on. It, you know, maybe the ticket sales aren't going right. Who knows what, you know, who really knows what the truth is, but during this era, the COVID, excuse will be a well enough excuse to use, if, you know, to cancel fights or anything like that, you know, because we are in this era. So, if I could be happy about something, I'm just happy about that it did get postponed. And what is it in, till October 9th. Oh, October 9th. Okay. So, you know what I mean? We just got to wait a few months. You know, I think as long as it still happens, I mean, I'm still happy. So, but it just does suck, like, how it's not this weekend.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Cause how dope would it have been? Like, we finally get the third fight. And, cause we, you know, yeah. the build up, all the rumors that, Deontay Wilder, the excuses that he had, I don't know. I don't believe any of them. I just think, you know, you should take your loss and like a man and move forward. But, you know, he had different excuses. But he is still the my heavyweight champion, so I got to support the guy. And we'll be behind him when the third fight happens. But, yeah, it just sucks that this fight's not happening. And but, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. And but as far as that, don't have too much to say. I just want to thank you, Chris, for having me on. And thank you for seeing that last minute one. You know,
yeah.
Big shout out to you, brother.
I was literally about to shut it down, dude. So I'm glad that you pressed that one. That was smart.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Thanks, brother. And but as far as that, yo, Chris, thank you for having me on. Viva Ropa Dope Radio and Viva Mexico, cabrones.
Yes, sir. We got him in at the buzzer. All righty. Let's shut this puppy down. Enjoy the fights this week, and hopefully, like I said, something just pops off and you get to talk about it. Like, it's like, yes, this is a great fight, you know? You never know. Maybe Joe Joyce, which I, for whatever reason, I always have fucking problems saying his name. Joy Joyce. You know, like, he can be hit a lot. You know what I mean? He's pretty big target. They're talking about the pay-per-view numbers. Someone messaged me. Okay, so here's the deal. I do think the pay-per-view is better suited in October than I do this last month. And the only reason why I say that, or this, you know, this weekend, the only reason why I say is because, one, the Olympics are popping off, so that is going to take up a lot of mainstream coverage. And really, Fox at the time was the one pushing it. Go figure. Fox always pushes their fights. But ESPN was just starting to get going. I didn't see one commercial in the NBA games. I'm not saying that's not the case 100%. I'm just saying I didn't see it. Or even like during whatever, watching a show on ESPN or whatever. So the Olympics, the opening weekend of the Olympics does take up a lot of casual sports fans in general. And, you know, the NBA Finals this week, Tuesday, and if Phoenix wins, there's a Game 7 on Thursday. So it's nice that it'd be over on Saturday, on Thursday, and you'd have, you know, an open weekend to an extent. But during the whole week, this is what people are going to be talking about. And then the Olympics. So, and also the fact that you have the NFL and college football for Fox and ESPN and ABC. To promote during the fall. You know, I think that actually does help the pay-per-view sales. But like I said, the box office thing, they didn't say, here's a refund. and let's put these tickets on sale to a new date. They just kept the gate. So my point is, people are really freaking out about this. Listen, we're going to find out the real information. Maybe that all this fake news media stuff and, you know, like, I get it. I call it out all the time on the show, guys, but we will get to know this gate, dude. We never know the exact pay-per-view numbers, but we always know the gate in this scenario in Vegas. So we're going to know the gate number. Just hope, you know, if it's 10 or 12 or 15 or whatever, well, I shouldn't say hope, because I know these people are never going to fucking be like, oh, you were right. And I'm not trying to be right, by the way. But a lot of people will say a lot of things, and then when the shit pops off, and it generally has to do with a PBC fight. People just, especially people not from this country or just fanboys that don't really pay attention to this shit, you can tell when tickets are selling bad. And I keep getting this message about the tax thing. Steve Kim has done a number on you guys, dude. I mean, how many shows? Like, hasn't it been 3 straight weeks? I don't even know. It's just so funny. Well, the tax thing, okay, so this person's saying, well, then explain it then, since you know so much, and Steve Kim knows more than me. Okay, the tax thing, what you can do is, for the 14th time or whatever, you can pay the tax on a ticket. You know, when you buy a ticket, there's always a fee in there, right? There's always a fee. Go back to Pearl Jam and Ticketmaster, how they didn't want to fuck with that, right? That dated me a little bit, but just check that out. So there's a fee. You pay the tax on the ticket. So if you pay the tax on the ticket, that does go down as a sold ticket. But remember, you're only paying the tax. So you can tell at the overall gate and what, like, if it's $700, $750 tickets and you just pay the tax on it, you can tell they literally have the category for each one, the amount for $150 ticket, $300, $750, $1,000, whatever, right? You get to see which ticket price point what they sell. This is basic, guys. Just because Steve Kim uses an excuse that's factual, that is true, it's factual, but you see how he's twisting it? And I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that because this guy just brought up Steve Kim. So I shouldn't say he's twisting it on this one because I don't know that. I've been blocked from Steve Kim for a long time for asking a question. No personal shots. He just blocked me for just literally asking a basic question, like a follow-up. But how about this? He doesn't want to debate. He just wants to block you. Anyway, I got to stop because this is just silly. This is just going over the same stuff. All right, peace. Enjoy the fights. We'll see you next week. All right, peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe.